All right. Good morning. Welcome. This is the Bitcoin Veterans Spaces. I believe we are on episode number 7. And we will be doing this every day for those of you who don't know who are new. Every day, Monday through Friday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern. And we're going to talk about Bitcoin. Everybody's welcome, whether you're a veteran or not. Sure, this show's basically hosted by veterans, but we want all Bitcoiners in here. You're welcome to come up. You're welcome to share your knowledge. The objective and the mission is to teach new people about Bitcoin and people who have been around for a minute. But as we all know, anybody who's been studying it for a few knows that the rabbit holes go deep, and the deeper you go, the more you start to realize, holy crap, they have them, and they're all super deep. Where do the rabbit holes end? I don't know. I've never found the bottom. I don't think anybody in Bitcoin has. I think anybody you've talked to who's been around for a while will tell you the same thing. You start embarking upon this journey of discovery and truth, and you start isolating the signal from the noise, and you start looking around at the world, and you start to realize, holy crap, almost everything I've been taught since I was a small child is bullshit. It's not necessarily a bad thing, though, because once you start to figure it out, at least, you know, once you get past the shock of it all, which takes a minute sometimes, depends on who you are, you know, you start to become ready to make changes and to embrace tools that are going to make your life better, make you more resilient. So thank you for being here. If you're a veteran, by the way, and you're interested in Bitcoin, shoot us a DM. Follow the handle Bitcoin Veterans at the top of the panel here. And you can join our chat groups. We have got all kinds of stuff going on. And also, we have a daily bulletin, which you can check out in the Nest. A copy of it should be in the Nest. And yeah. So why don't we get going? I have with me today, my name's Alex Danzig, by the way. I'm your host. I have with me today my co-host, Coleman Payne. Good morning, Coleman. How you doing, brother?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing great. That's an awesome way to start this space up with that speech. Getting all fired up.
Yeah, man, I think it's important to keep people on mission, you know what I mean? And people won't be on mission if they don't know what the mission is. So A, it's good to remind people. B, for people who are new, trying to figure out what the hell are these weirdos doing in here? You know, I think it's helpful. It, you know, it's good framing. It also lets all the other Bitcoiners know that this is like a wide open space. Like, you know, everybody's welcome. Unless you're a lizard or work for the Federal Reserve, then not so much. But, I mean, look, to be fair, if somebody from the Federal Reserve wanted to come talk to us, I'd be happy to have them join us. That would be pretty interesting, wouldn't it? They probably wouldn't get out of here without some scrapes. But it's all good. Good morning, Terrence. Good morning to Jordan Gambrell on the operation Libertas Handle. Good morning to Gabe Lord, head of operation Bitcoin. AC, what's up, Bob? Good morning.
Good morning, lucky number 7.
Let's go. All right, so I don't know about you guys, but I have been checking out Nostr a little more, not going to lie. Been on Primal a couple times, trying to see what's going on. Just really still trying to figure out how it works. Why? I'm not the only one, by the way. Why? What's going on out there?
Maybe it has something to do with the Telegram CEO.
Hell yeah. Yeah, when you say what's going on, I'm going to answer that with the same thing that's always going on. There are forces that are working to decrease the level of the amount of privacy that we have and simultaneously the amount of freedom that we have. And that's not stopping. It's not slowing down. It's speeding up. And I think just more and more people are recognizing it and noticing that and feeling the motivation to act accordingly and to start taking alternate steps. And, yeah, you know, right now, it certainly appears that Nostr is the is the way to go if we're going to have any type of any level of privacy in our communication. So I'm seeing, I mean, if anybody in here is paying attention to their Twitter feed, they're probably seeing a whole lot more conversation about Nostr, and everybody's posting their end pubs. And it's, I mean, it's turned into a key exchange as everybody begins to make that that migration.
The parallels to Bitcoin are, I mean, it's almost identical. And so it's interesting to me when certain Bitcoiners resist getting into Nostr because it can remind us of the fiat mines when we're trying to orange pill. And, you know, they talk about just how easy the dollar network is and their credit cards work just fine and Venmo and Zelle. And I get it. Everybody's on that network. Life is easy. You don't have to think about it. And we just have to remind ourselves, because I'm like Alex, I've been very slow to Nostr, and it's like I've had it. I set it up back when the first round of this influence was going around, and everyone's like, get these in pubs, and we're all trying to figure it out. But it's like, if you do want to have, you know, sovereignty and a separation of your wealth, and you want to equate that to your ideas and your information and, you know, your social interaction, you know, Nostr does that because it is a protocol. It is not a platform, you know, so very much like Bitcoin not being a company, and it being a protocol that is decentralized and democratized for everybody, it does do that. But of course, we get comfortable. I mean, Twitter is nice. It's pretty. It's easy to interact with. Like, I see all these NPubs on my timeline. It's like, okay, so I click it, nothing happens. Okay, now I got to go into the person's tweet. Okay, now I can copy it. Now I got to flip over to, oh, wait, I got to download Primal or Domus, whatever. But, you know, when we started with Bitcoin, it was the same thing. Wait, I've got to have keys. I've got to have a wallet. And so it's just something new to learn about, but it's definitely, I mean, intellectually, it makes perfect sense. I think we just have to get uncomfortable to realize the benefits of it.
Yeah, 100%, Terrence. I think one of the things that I asked myself watching all this play out is, why now, right? And, you know, we saw Pavel, Telegram CEO, get arrested in France. And if you guys saw Zuckerberg's memo that he released out to, I think it was Senator Jim Jordan yesterday, I think that kind of paints the picture, at least for me, you know, that you've got Zuck on one side who sold your information, and he's a free man. And you got another guy who resisted the government, and he got arrested. And so that paints the picture of why Nostr and why now. And I love the way that you frame it under the context of, you know, it's a grassroots from the beginning, just like Bitcoin. And I think that that's one of those things that people got to realize. Like you said, you've got to get uncomfortable with this new freedom technology and start to adopt it and start to figure it out, just like we all did with Bitcoin, you know, years ago, trying to figure out public keys and private keys and UTXOs. Nostr is almost exactly the same, just a different journey.
AC, do you care to share what Zuckerberg released in that statement?
Yeah, there were three things that he kind of laid out. Off the top of my head, he had said that, yes, he censored information on the Twitter platform and on Instagram related to the Hunter Biden laptop. He had throttled some information going against the Harris-Biden administration. And there's one other. Let me go dig it up, and then I'll throw it in the nest.
So there's a interesting thing I saw the other day in regards to, well, it was yesterday, I think, in regards to Zuckerberg releasing this information. Notice, you know, it's not until now that he's released it. Why did he wait? Why is this only coming out now? You know, people have been asking for this information for a long, long time now. And a person pointed out that Zuckerberg basically has access to the world's largest global sentiment engine. Aside from something like Google, where people are searching, the difference is on Facebook, people are talking to each other, right? So you can literally analyze in real time what people are talking about, what they're interested in, what they're thinking about. And I would suggest that's an incredible superpower to have that kind of, it's almost a form of omniscience You understand what I'm saying? It's almost a deity level power where you can just sort of read the minds of hundreds of millions of people. And so this guy was pointing out, he's like, hey, why is this coming out now? And why is he throwing the Biden-Harris administration and the federal agencies that put pressure on him to censor? Why is he revealing all of this now? And the point was made, well, he's probably revealing it because he sees what's coming. He has the sentiment engine. He has the omniscient view into hundreds of millions of people's minds. And he probably at this point, I don't know for sure. I'm kind of just going on what I read, and it seems plausible to me. He probably at this point thinks that Trump will probably be elected president of the United States. And if he doesn't, you know, it's basically picking a side, is it not? Like, if you come out and you throw the current administration under the bus and say, hey, they made me do all of this surveillance shit to the people, he's kind of pre-staging himself to say, hey, don't like come after me. But maybe. What do you guys think about that?
I think he's definitely hedging his bets, because right now that election is a freaking toss-up. And the poll data that you see, which of course it is what it is and should only be believed to a certain point, but I don't think anybody can really call this election right now. And I think he sees the shifting in the wind, and he understands that he may be at risk. And you're absolutely right about it's very similar to basically having mental telepathy for millions of people on the planet. For him, he knows what's going on from a societal perspective, from a cultural perspective, on a global scale. He collects data, real-time data, and has they analyze patterns that are trending among the universal mindset of entire cultures of organizations. It's a trip what they can do. And the reality is there are millions and millions of people that are literally uploading every facet and aspect of their lives into his database that is collecting that data real time, analyzing it, and then giving him results and projections on group behavior and group think. And so that's a pretty accurate way, really, for him to assess what's going on and how people are going to behave. And it has moved him at least to the point of recognizing the necessity of hedging his bets and kind of taking a couple of concessions here and there and positioning himself for the eventuality that he may be a target at some point, that he may be at risk. And I mean, that's an interesting thing about Noster, of course, is there's no CEO to go after with Noster. There's no throat to choke. There's no head to chop off. It is truly a decentralized network. And that is one of the most powerful aspects of it that I believe people are beginning to recognize more and more. And it's similar to how we were talking about earlier, that shift in perspective of people appreciating and understanding the need for Bitcoin. I see this as a very, very similar type of situation, and that people are going to recognize. And of course, it's going to be Bitcoiners first to recognize it, and that migration will begin with them, but then with others as well. And it's, you know, in large part, just like it is with Bitcoin, I believe that it's the responsibility of those who see the value in that and recognize the importance of Noster. It's our obligation and our responsibility to share that with other people. But yeah, he definitely sees that things are moving in a direction where he might have a target, figuratively speaking, that is going to appear on him, and he wants to make sure that he's protecting himself preemptively.
Do you guys remember around October 2021 when Jack Dorsey had posted on Twitter about hyperinflation is coming? For me, this is very reminiscent of that exact same thing, right? So back then, Jack had, he still had Twitter, and he had access to all of the tweets that were going around, and he probably saw the writing on the wall as well, as far as XYZ getting more expensive, food getting more expensive, cost of energy, cost of gas, cost of housing, and that, I mean, I don't know, Jack, I wish I did, but that probably prompted him to make that sort of statement. And just like you said, Alex, Zuck making this statement at this particular time in the election, he probably has some sort of insider understanding or assumption that he has a good sense of what the outcome of the election is going to be. And this is probably a little bit of pandering to the potential new administration that, hey, I'm coming, open kimono. These are the things I did. Please don't put me in prison also.
Does anybody know, you know, the CEO of Telegram was mentioned a little earlier. My understanding is that the CEO of Rumble also left Europe, basically, you know. It was kind of made out like he was fleeing. Does anybody know? Is the CEO of Telegram still in jail? Did they let him out yet? What are they charging him with?
I heard there were 7 charges, I think. I didn't see the details on it, though. And I believe still detained, yes.
Yeah, so there were 12 charges. 6 counts of complicity with alleged communication activity. And the biggest one that I found alarming was providing cryptology services aiming to ensure confidentiality without certified declaration. So I had to Google what that really meant. And it just means that they didn't have any authorization for their cryptology from France or the EU.
Yeah, it's incredible. Basically, what it's asserting is that you have to have the government's permission to use cryptology. That's a wild, wild assertion and a wild positioning development. People, I don't know if people realize how insidious and nefarious that is. You know, it's absolutely a move in the direction of tyranny. There's no doubt in my mind about it. It's the whole you're not allowed. I mean, it comes down to that thing about rights coming from man or rights coming from God. You guys understand what I'm talking about? You know, in the founding documents of the United States of America, the founding fathers clearly said that our rights as humans come from God, not from man. And I think it's an interesting positioning. Whether you believe that's correct or not, the difference between the two is if your rights come from man, then man can take them away from you. And if your rights come from God, then man can take them away, but they weren't granted to you from man. Man can just use force against you, essentially. And it's mind-blowing to me today that we're in a place where it's just very, very dystopian stuff, stuff you would only see out of science fiction movies, you know what I mean? You're not allowed to use cryptography because you can't have private conversations with people. It's pretty scary stuff. Mickey Koss, good morning. Welcome. Also, Texas, what's up?
Morning. Hey.
Good morning. Just changing diapers and thinking about the current global state of anarcho-tyranny.
Okay.
Well, and they could have gone about it in such a different way, too. Like, I'm not a European, so I don't know, but I mean, they could have banned the app itself. I don't know if they did or not, but they could have, you know, tried to censor it that way.
Yeah, but would that have the desired effect? What do you think the reasoning is behind why they arrested him?
They're sending a message, of course.
Yeah, they're making an example, right? So sure, they could have done that, but that's so what? That's kind of beside the point. It doesn't really matter, being honest, because why would they do that? You know what I mean? Like, if what they're really trying to do right now is create a chilling effect on any developer or any CEO of a company or any head of a company that might provide services to humans that allows them to be free, essentially is what it comes down to. It's like, it's pretty mind blowing. Do you guys think, so let's walk down this potential pathway. 2 scenarios, Harris gets elected, Trump gets elected. I suppose there's more scenarios than that, but those are the 2 big ones. Harris gets elected. Do you think Elon's in jeopardy of getting arrested?
Absolutely.
Anybody else have any thoughts here?
And Andrew Torba of Gab. I and all these guys.
Alex, I think before we go down that path, maybe this opinion is a little bit tinfoil hatty. But the other thought that I had is, why would they try to chill Telegram and not go after other end-to-end encrypted chat platforms? Is it because they are already co-opted? Is it because they already have information, access, connections, and data within those platforms, but they didn't as well within Telegram? And so if you think that's a possibility, then you start to question, is Signal or WhatsApp or anything else, is that really the solution? Or should we start looking at, like we've talked about before, this freedom technology that exists within decentralized platforms and relays like Nostr, or like some of the other chat programs like SimpleX, Keet, Holepunch, any of the gamut of things? Is that worth exploring if other platforms have already been co-opted?
Yeah, so, but there's two different things going on here. I agree with you, by the way. That's a very interesting point that you brought up. You know, for example, Signal, you know, why haven't they arrested that guy? Part of it might be that, like, this is just the way these things tend to go. If you notice that they go, usually there's some kind of trial balloon. A trial balloon is a test. They'll run a test and they'll see the public's reaction to it. And if the public doesn't, you know, turn up with pitchforks and torches, then they're like, you can get away with this, right? So if you watch Canada, you watch Australia, all the crazy ass government, woke, communist policies and regulations that they usually pull them there first. And they're testing. They're testing to see what the public is going to do about it. Now, granted, that may not be an apples and apples test, because here in the United States of America, we still have our firearms. And in Canada and in Australia, basically, they don't. But at the same time, there's that whole testing thing. The other thing is that there is a difference between private communications and unruggable networks. And I think that's important to distinguish. Like Nostr, for example, I'm not sure all that's private. Somebody can correct me if I don't understand that correctly. But the idea with Nostr, I believe, is it is decentralized and therefore very difficult to kill. Is that right or not right?
No, that's correct. It's just like Bitcoin. It's like there's nodes and there's relays, and so nothing lives in any centralized cloud or computers. It all lives on our own devices and computers. So it would be almost impossible to kill. They can make it difficult, just like with Bitcoin, by, you know, maybe the Apple Store can say, hey, we're not going to host Primal or Domus. But you could easily just go on the internet to any web browser and type it in. It works outside of an app.
Yeah. So testing, probing, testing. This is something humans just do. And you start doing it as a child when you try to get away with crap with your parents. You're continually testing the boundaries, right? This is why it's important for parents to, it's really important for children to have boundaries. Like, then they start to understand consequences. They start to understand limits. They start to understand what they can and cannot do. If there's no concept of that, that's what gets people into trouble. But to bring it forward to now, what just happened recently, and this is in the Daily Intelligence Bulletin, is apparently China has sent a military plane into Japanese airspace. So, in a violation of the airspace of Kyushu, basically, is the area. It's unknown at this point whether it was intentional or not, but it did violate the airspace. They're doing it constantly in Taiwan. But you notice in Taiwan, it's now, they have almost a continuous air presence in the air defense zone of Taiwan. They're literally violating their airspace constantly at this point. But notice, this one is just one time, and they're all shocked about it. Testing. Shout out to DR Lewis in the audience. Any thoughts on that? You guys are super quiet today.
No, Alex, I think you're absolutely right. I don't know about everyone else, but you know, the wheels start spinning and the machine starts grinding when you throw information out there like that. You know, it reminds me, probably being a little bit older than some of the folks out in the audience, during like the 1980s and 1990s when I was a kid growing up, my dad happened to be stationed in Alaska at the time, and we had very similar probing from the Soviet Union flying their Russian Bear bombers up and through and towards Alaska. And then, you know, in all honesty, us doing the exact same thing, you know, testing their borders, and then watching their responses and then modifying our, you know, response plans based on, you know, their actions. We see the, we saw the exact same thing in Iraq and Afghanistan as, you know, different groups modified their TTPs based on our reactions and vice versa. And I think you're right. You know, this is probably one of those like canaries in the coal mine of, hey, let's arrest this guy and let's see what everyone else does. Are they too distracted by their current lives? Are they too distracted by the presidential election or inflation or any of the other things that they have, you know, placed in our path? And if so, and they're too distracted to pay attention or care, how much further can we push the people towards more chaos and ultimately to?
Yeah, that's an interesting part you brought up about the chaos, because when it comes down to taking control, a lot of times the chaos precedes the control. You look at basically the way the U.S. has perfected the process of overthrowing a country's political regime. You go in there and you create absolute chaos. You create doubts in the minds of the people. You get people hating on each other. You create division. You create factions. Super important in a color revolution is you have to create a disbelief that voting for the next president that they want or whomever actually matters. Like, there's nothing, voting is irrelevant. You can't, if you vote, it doesn't matter. That's what they actually want you to think. That's a part of a Marxist playbook when you're doing color revolutions. And like I say we, the United States, certain agencies with the United States, and indeed the U.S. military, has become very good at this stuff.
Yeah, you know, I think about it a lot recently. I think of it in like three C's, right? There's the chaos, the control, and the compliance. And, you know, if you zoom out far enough, you can see how those tools have been used in different areas around the world and how they've kind of been turned around and used towards like a U.S. populace or a different country's populace. Like if you look at like the U.K. right now and all the things going on over there, it makes me think that there's probably an entity or a regime above governments that are manipulating, you know, the world order of things to accomplish some goal that has not yet been revealed.
Well, you look at, you know, the stuff with immigration, you notice it's not just happening in the U.S., it's happening all over the world. You notice that there are insiders in every country aiding and abetting. You also notice that there are what do you call it? Extranational organizations. These are like international, quote, aid and other type organizations that are essentially facilitating the whole process. There was a video that came out not too long ago. It was a documentary. There was a guy who basically walked the pathway from some country in South America through the Darien Gap, through coming all the way up through Central America into the United States. He embedded himself essentially with a bunch of people who were trying to get into the United States and found that they were basically being guided to the United States by all these extra national entities. I forget the names of them, but there are people in the audience who I recognize who know what I'm talking about. You've seen the documentary and you probably know the organizations I'm referring to. So it's like, you got to wonder at that point, you got to start going follow the money, right? How do these organizations get funded? Does anybody know?
Please don't say taxpayer money.
Well, partially it's taxpayer money. So you're, yeah, partially it is. So you're paying for, in some ways, you're paying for your own demise. But it's also, from what I understand, you know, the Gates Foundation is heavily involved in a lot of this kind of stuff. I mean, that guy is, he is something else, man.
I'm sure a lot through NGOs, see USAID, anybody that's been overseas knows, you know, kind of what their mission supports is, you know,
Who's talking right now? Is that Texas?
I think that's Walker, but we can't hear him very well.
Yeah, somebody's got a bad connection.
How much, or did that documentary mention, how much of this influence is from foreign nationals like China?
Yeah, that wasn't clear. Let me go find it, and I'll send it over to you, Coleman, later, so you can take a look. Yeah.
Thank you.
Awesome. Somebody is still stuck in the Matrix, and it's either Walker or Texas.
Yeah, Walker, why don't you walk off and come back? We can't hear you.
I think it's Texas, actually. He was doing this
yesterday. It's not too. Me, man. It ain't me.
Yeah, no, it's Walker. I can see.
That was great.
Get my name out of your mouth, man.
Come on. Get my name out of your mouth before I slap it out your mouth. Not me.
No, I think Israel's heavily involved in that stuff, too. I don't know if China is, but Israel is as well.
All right. If anybody knows anything else about that particular thing with actual info, let's go there. If not, let's move on. Did you guys catch the Sean Ryan Trump interview last night? That was interesting. I don't know. I kind of felt like Trump was interviewing himself. Anybody else get that feeling?
100%.
What was the biggest takeaway? I missed that.
Well, basically, Trump has this amazing ability to talk in circles. I guess all politicians do, but Trump repeats himself a lot. And he'll take a question and he'll almost ignore it and start talking about what he wants to talk about. And granted, again, all politicians do this, but I mean, just watching the process last night was really kind of mind-blowing to me. It's like, Jesus, dude. Just answer the guy's question already. And in some cases, he would answer the question, but it would be very, how shall I say, brief and sometimes vague. The one question that I thought really was that he addressed all kinds of things. He addressed basically the Charlie Foxtrot that is the U.S. military of today. They addressed DEI things. They addressed bad leadership in government, in the military, and in other, obviously, in other areas. They addressed the border, not because Sean Ryan even asked him about the border. He didn't, but Trump apparently wanted to talk a lot about the border, which, I mean, it's on a lot of people's minds, so that's fair. You know, it's a common issue that people in America are concerned about. I think the border is a huge issue for people. I think inflation is a huge issue for people. They didn't really talk at all about inflation. To me, the most interesting part of that whole interview was at the very end when Sean Ryan basically said to him, "Hey, man, I don't have any trust in any government institution. I don't trust any of them at all. Zero. Trust is shattered." I'm paraphrasing at this point, but just trying to get the message across here. And then he said, "If you're elected president, what are you going to do to restore the trust of the American people in the government? And will there be accountability?" And that, I think, is a big question of a lot of people. Will there be accountability? Why? Because, I mean, I don't think I'm the only one who over the last 5-10 years has been watching what's going on and thinking, wow, that was wildly illegal. That politician just did something wildly illegal. Why is nobody getting arrested here? Like, what in the actual F is going on right now? Like, that, there are certain things that have happened that, coming from a military background, I'm looking at and I'm thinking, well, that's basically treason. That person just committed treason. Why is no one getting, you know, arrested over this stuff? And I think, you know, if you're listening to me, you probably possibly had the same thoughts from time to time. Like, what the hell is going on here? You get Ghislaine Maxwell and the client list. You got Epstein's client list. I don't think anybody's been arrested or charged. It's not like they don't have the names. Things that make you go, hmm. So anyway, back to the point. Trump did answer the question. He did say at one point, yes, there will be accountability. That's all he really said about that. And then he went off on one of his rambling rants. Anybody else have any thoughts on that interview?
I think he does ramble a lot. And I was trying to explain it to my mother-in-law. We listened to it last night. And I think the reason why he kind of goes on these tangents is because, rightfully so, he's got a bone to pick. Like, I think we kind of all agree that the election, there's a lot of nefarious actions that took place, and it could be argued that it was stolen. There seems to be a lot of double standards against Trump and then with the current administration. So I think he's frustrated and just wants to get it out. But I think people in his camp need to kind of just start reining him in and get him just to hit on specific topics, because at this point, I feel like if you've listened to one Trump speech in the last 2-3 months, they're all the exact same.
Yeah, I mean, that's somewhat to be expected. You know, there's talking points, right? He's got his staff is telling him these are the top things you need to talk about. This is what the people are concerned about. This is what's going to connect with your base, all that kind of stuff. I get it. But at the same time, I mean, as you say, once it starts to get a little robotic, I mean, it loses its, it must be hard. I mean, it's easy for us all to sit here and judge the man on Twitter Spaces, not out there actually running for president ourselves and having to be on this campaign trail and saying the same shit over and over and over again and trying to sound excited about it. So, but yeah, any other thoughts on that interview and the stuff that he was talking about there? Quite an interesting team they've got going on there. You've got Tulsi Gabbard on board with that. You've got RFK on board with that. Vivek is on board with that. Elon is on board with that. Who am I missing?
JD Vance.
Oh, I suppose I don't know why. In my mind, I don't really count him as mattering that much. I don't know why. Somebody tell me what's amazing about JD Vance. I don't even know.
Did you see the donut clip?
No.
Him ordering donuts? It's like he's never been in a donut shop before. It's kind of odd. He's very awkward. No, but one of the problems with Trump, it's like, yeah, we all feel that same way where we're hearing this same spiel over and over again. And he needs to get... The problem is that he's won before and that he was in, and that a lot of stuff that he wanted to accomplish didn't get accomplished. So now... It's almost like his base is expecting more of some concrete proposals that says like, hey, this is how we're going to do the immigration, not just, hey, we're going to deport everybody. Let's get some actual tangible plans in place and start talking about them. Because right now, a lot of people just don't believe that he's going to, you know, achieve what he wants to achieve. And so I don't know, me specifically as somebody in the base that he's trying to court, it's like, I want to hear some more concrete stuff rather than these little platitudes.
Yeah, I think that's fair, actually. I think you're right on the mark with that. Go ahead, AC.
I was going to say, too, that typically in election cycles like this, the person who's running isn't necessarily trying to court towards their base. They're trying to bring others from the opposing side over to their side. And I think the challenge for the Trump administration right now is they have nothing to discuss or debate about when the opposition hasn't come out with any concrete policies of their own. And so how do you bring in, you know, Democrats or centrists over to Trump's side if really there isn't anything to talk about? I mean, and it's kind of appalling to me that, you know, somebody who's in the seat, who's running for the seat, has no concrete policies on all the things that are impacting Americans and people's day-to-day lives right now. So I think that, for me at least, that's Trump's biggest challenge is, yeah, we can talk about inflation, immigration, and all these other things that are affecting people, but how am I going to do it better than the opposition when the opposition hasn't laid out any semblance of a plan yet?
Right. That's why he needs to take initiative and come out with it first and create the earned media that way by creating some controversy with his proposals. I think that'll work a lot better than trying to, like, you know, counter whatever the other side is doing.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great point. And it dovetails into what Texas was talking about. People are wondering about how do we do this? Because the last administration, granted, I suspect that he was absolutely surrounded by traitors and traitors to him. I mean, you know what I'm saying? Like people who betrayed him and people who would tell him something that basically was not either true or was ineffective. And he was surrounded by a bunch of these people in his last administration. And so they actually talked about this in the Sean Ryan interview, and Trump's response to it, or his what he said about it, was essentially, he's like, hey, I didn't know what I didn't know. I'm paraphrasing. He's like, I didn't know. And I thought that these people were good actors and they were giving me good advice. And as it turns out, a bunch of them weren't. So he says, since then, you know, he was in there for 4 years. He's also, you know, been around for a minute since then. And he's says that he's identified, you know, who's strong, who's weak, who's trustable, who's not trustable, all those different kinds of things. So I guess we'll see. Personally, I mean, without knowing these people individually, because it's really hard, you know, you've got the public persona, you've got what people see on TV, you've got what people hear in interviews and all that kind of stuff. But do you really know a person unless you spend a lot of time with that person, like in person, and watch them during times of difficulty? Because you don't really know how somebody's going to react until they get hit by something. You know, somebody gets hit with a huge challenge. How do they prevail, right? You don't know.
Yeah, the personnel is the major issue. I mean, I don't think he's learned his lesson from what I've seen so far. I mean, he can say he did, but when you put J.D. Vance, who is a never Trump guy, who voted, you know, these people that obviously in his first term didn't like him and talk trash about him, now all of a sudden they're going to be in the administration. I would rather see loyalists from the get-go, but he seems to be alienating those people in his quest for, like, becoming more centrist, and I think that's the wrong move, but we'll see.
Why would you say he's alienating those people?
It's like the Project 2025 people. That's, you know, a lot of those are Trump loyalists. Part of that program is basically just staffing the administration with people that are loyal to him and his original 2016 vision. And his disavowal of that, his continual disavowal, or and now J.D. Vance coming out and saying that he would veto an abortion, federal abortion legislation, that's alienating to his pro-life base. There's a lot of people that he's kind of shrugging off when he's trying to get these other people that I don't think really matter, like the swing state people are 90% white, and certain demographics, and he seems to be grabbing for the Hispanic vote, the African-American vote.
Let's do this. Let's shift gears a little bit, because I feel like we're a little deep in the weeds on details that don't matter to a lot of people.
I can go on forever, man. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Hey, Alex, one thing I'd like to say to kind of pivot the conversation a little bit is, you know, when we're starting in our Bitcoin journey, we all eventually change our mind, right? Most of us didn't start off orange-pilled out of the womb about Bitcoin, and we thought, hey, this is this crazy fake Ponzi internet money. But eventually we all changed our mind and our opinion on Bitcoin. And I think that what we're seeing now on the political landscape, and then we'll put a pin in it, is that people are starting to change their mind and open their eyes to what's happening around them because of the pain that they're feeling. And I think that eventually that pain that they feel will pivot them towards Bitcoin as well.
To the point, somebody had brought up something about making an argument to the other side and having them switch over. I don't know that there's really anything that they can say that's going to get people to switch over. What is interesting, though, is that I've seen now several videos of people who basically have been lifelong Democrats. They've worked, and it started with RFK, actually. RFK came out and he's like, look, I've been a Democrat my whole life. I grew up in a Democrat family. I've always been a Democrat ever since I was even a little kid. Before I even knew what it was, I was a Democrat. And he's like, I've always believed in that party. And he, in his speech, if you didn't hear it, he was explaining how, like, that was the party that protected the Constitution, that believed in people's freedom, that believed in people's individual rights, you know? And that's the reason why he was part of that. And that the current Democratic Party has moved completely away from those values. It's like an unrecognizable thing to many traditional Democrats, like RFK, for example. And this one video I'm thinking of, this woman is like, I've been doing this for decades. She's like, I volunteer, I go to all these things, I help them raise money, I help them organize, I give my time to help them set things up, break things down, make sure everything happens smoothly. And she's like, lately, what the experience has been is just nonstop asking rich people for money. And like, I don't feel like anything that's important to me is represented by these people anymore. I don't like, she's like, I go to these things and I don't feel like I relate to any of them. I'm not connected to any of them anymore. That's a very profound shift in what's going on there. And if they lose, there's a certain amount of the base that is basically like, it's the whole smoke and mirrors Wizard of Oz like show, right? They control the media so they can basically program people to think a certain way. And a large part of the population has no idea it's even happening to them. The thing that I'm reminded of is when, I think it was AC here that said, there's no platform that he can debate against. And it made me think of the, I didn't watch the whole DNC, but I saw parts of it. And it just totally reminded me of, I'm sorry to say, it reminded me of that movie Idiocracy. It was cracking me up. Like, there's that one scene where the president in Idiocracy comes out. And it's like, I'm watching the DNC convention and I'm like, Jesus, it's like the same thing. There's no plan. It's just like a big party. Like, it's like, let's party. Bread and circuses.
The whole lack of a policy from the Democratic platform with no policy positions is really frustrating, but it's totally by design. I mean, just so they can't be held accountable later on that. Just more campaigning from the basement, it feels like. And
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, there's some pretty good points. And there's something else that I'm noticing is that that shift that we're talking about of lifelong Democrats, you know, moving more towards supporting the Republican side, we're not seeing that shift happen in the opposite direction. And so you're not hearing of any notable influencers on the conservative side that are shifting, you know, that are changing their colors and that are going on board with the current administration in support of them. It's just not happening. And so, and I believe that it's an indicator of the readiness of people in general, of the increasing readiness of people to kind of open up their minds and to perhaps take a fresh look at things. And it's really, much of it is just based on the experience of pain that so many people are finding themselves in right now. Cause they're like, man, this is not it. It's not working. Whatever we've been doing here and whatever ideology I've been in step with is not serving in a way that it was intended to serve, whether or not that is the case or not. But we're not seeing that shift happen in the other direction. And I think that part of the reason why we're not getting a whole lot of policy talk and platform talk from the liberal side is that there's nothing new. They're going after their base and they're trying to hold on to their base and they're strengthening their base. And that's really, I believe, what their focus is on. They're going after their diehard people. And if somebody wants to go ahead and switch sides, then they're not really too worried about that. Whereas on the other side, I think that we're seeing the Trump train going around trying to gather all those people up and trying to convert people to their side over there and that's why you're seeing more of an aggressive approach with him and more of that's part of the reason why he approached his the Bitcoin crowd, and that's why he's coming after Bitcoiners and pandering to us is because he knows that's a pretty good sized voting block right there. And if he can get all the people that like playing with their Bitcoins to come on over and vote for him, then that's going to be something new, especially if he can, because he knows that people that are involved in Bitcoin tend to be pretty passionate about it. And so they're going to, if they're single issue voters, then that's fine. They can be single issue voters as long as they're voting for him, I believe is his perspective. But that's what we're seeing. And but the end result is, I mean, so much of it is theater. And there are much, much larger forces at play here that have been at play long before either one of these candidates showed up on the scene. And when we're really going to find out what each position of each party is after they win the election. Whatever that looks like, I don't think it's going to be clean. I think it's going to be ugly, and I think that we can look forward to that and be prepared to keep calm and level heads about it. But I think that what we're going to see is a continued attack on privacies. Just kind of bring it back around to that. And I want to echo something that was said earlier about the probing, about going, seeing what is tolerable, seeing what people are going to notice, seeing what people are going to accept as far as courses of action that are going to be taken. And I believe that ultimately the goal is to really establish a centralized flow of information that really is the only option for you to go towards. And if you're not using that state-sponsored centralized social platform, then essentially what's the best word to say it? You're existing outside of the authorized system, I guess we could say. And the thing about it is, I mean, it seems like that migration towards decentralized social communication, it seems like it really should be something easy for Bitcoiners to understand, because it's not, once we get to that place of understanding, we get it that our decentralized money makes sense. Good. Now, something else that is extremely valuable and perhaps maybe even more valuable than money is information. When you control the information, you control people's thoughts, essentially. You control the way people make decisions. You control the way that people conduct themselves, and you can have a strong influence on their behavior as a population in general on a global scale. And just think for a second about the value of that. Think about the power that someone has that possesses that. If you possess the power to control people's actions, that's much more valuable than controlling the flow of money, because you can control the way that they decide to use their money, which is even more effective. And so I think that we're in an interesting time, because whoever wins this election, I think that we have enough people now, at least more people now, that are focused on this, that are focused on the power of decentralization when it comes to to the way we approach money and to the way that we approach information, that there are enough people having these conversations that are going to hold accountable those who are quote in power, and to bring them to a different level of really, holding them, like I said, holding them accountable for their actions, and then taking appropriate actions if they don't. And whether this looks like people just voting, people just speaking with their votes, or voting with their feet, I think we're going to see an interesting shift over the next few years.
Right on. Okay, we are coming up to the top of the hour, which means we're going to be wrapping up pretty soon. I would like to do some shout outs to our partners really quick. And after that, we can go with some closing comments before we wrap up. want to talk about really quickly, Silent, that's SLNT.com. So Silent does Faraday bags. You can put your phones in them. You can put your Bitcoin wallets, so on and so forth in them. They protect against EMP and radio frequency stuff. If you want to basically go dark off the map, you just put your phone in it and seal it up. Also, Black Sheep Ammunition. Also, Solo Satoshi. Check out solosatoshi.com. These are the guys that do the bit axes, and they're trying to get bit axes into everybody's hands as cheaply as possible. I think it's a fantastic initiative. Support these guys big time. And finally, Punch Plate for your steel seed plate needs. Backing up them seed phrases, pretty important, guys. All right, let's go around, get some closing comments, and wrap up here. Gabe or Mickey, you got anything?
I'm just throwing there. This is an important topic, okay? And if for anyone who is passionate about Bitcoin, who understands the power behind it, this is really just the next step in that evolution. Is really the control of our information, the control of our communication, and ultimately our privacy. There are very few forces that are fighting to help us have more of it. There are more forces that are working to taking it away from us, and that doesn't stop. It doesn't sleep, and it's not something we should be scared of, but we should definitely be aware of it, and we should certainly be acting appropriately. And if we don't know what we're doing, it's okay. Ask somebody a question. Nobody knew what they were doing before they started asking questions and figuring it out. So if Nostr seems weird to you, ask somebody. Once you get in there, people are gonna show you the way. So yeah, get your privacy, because if you don't, you're not gonna have it.
Yeah, Roger that. Terrence and AC or AC, either you guys got anything? Bob or Texas, you guys got anything?
Nostr's like your ham radio. They can't shut it down.
Interesting correlation. Coleman Payne, do you have any closing comments before we wrap?
No, just spinning off what Gabe said. Yeah, just make sure, give Nostr a try, or Nostr a try, and yeah, just play around with it. It's fun, but you definitely want to make sure that you're ready for what's to come. I don't think things are going to get calmer over the next 60, 90 days. Keep your head on a swivel.
All right, then, that's a wrap. Thanks for being here, guys. Appreciate it. Catch us on the Bitcoin Veterans video podcast every week live Tuesday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Tonight, we're going to be our special guest, me, Coleman Payne. We're going to learn about his life and why he's the freak that he is today. It's going to be awesome. Don't miss it. We're also doing these every day, Monday through Friday at 10 a.m. Eastern, these audio spaces. Appreciate all the speakers for being here. And taking your time to teach people about Bitcoin. We do appreciate that. Also, producer Jacob, thanks for producing the show. This is what we call getting on the mission, teaching people about this bright orange future. Highly important to all of us. Freedom is the main topic today. And the forces that are acting against freedom. I'm a big time freedom maxi, and I think there's only two paths here, guys. It's going to get much, much darker, or we find ways to push back. And that's what Bitcoin's all about. Sovereign financial freedom, and which leads to really every other form of freedom for the most part. Anyway, we will see you guys tomorrow. Love y'all. Everybody have a great day. Get out there and crush it.